This is emotion art. Emotion because we are literally made of emotion. And art because everything we do wants to be art. Emotion art. This is a conversation I had with my friend Stevie. When I'm around Stevie, I always have a sense of a person who is really alive. As I went through and edited this conversation, I had a really strong sense of gratitude that this human being was willing to sit in a spotlight and take an honest look inside and collaborate on painting a picture of the treasure in there, of the emotions. I listen to these conversations once they're podcasts, and I hear it in a different way than when I'm recording or when I'm editing. My favorite way to hear them. Here, I find wonder. Enjoy.
Was born and raised in a very small rural town of Pennsylvania called Catawissa. And was a very wild child. I was just wanted to be outside all the time. I was always running around, getting dirty, playing dress up with my mom's lingerie, not wearing clothes, getting the neighbors called. So I was very wild and just wanted to like build things and make concoctions out of grass and flowers, and was pretty inventive. I was always like inventing things and getting everybody together, rallying up the neighbors and my sisters to make these like elaborate forts and rides. And so my childhood was very like free, which kind of calls back to our previous session.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to what age? Like, how long did this kind of stage of childhood last in your mind?
Total freedom, total wild, probably like until 5. Mm-hmm. And then school was really hard. I also, my family, there's so much trauma. There's so much like intergenerational trauma. My mom was her and her like 6 siblings were all adopted out, foster children, and a long line of like immigration from my mom's side, my dad's side. My dad experienced traumatic loss when I was growing up. So his 2 parents died. And then following that, his younger brother, who is like my younger sister to him, they're best friends, died in his driveway, and my cousin died. It was just like death, 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 death all the time when I was younger. And him and my mom split up, and it was just a pretty, pretty heavy time. I had my own sexual trauma when I was little, probably around the same age. So a lot of like really hard stuff really fast, and a lot of division. And then my mom was super depressed, and just, I think, as a child, you don't realize how hard it is to make it with 3 children as a woman in that time. So yes, she slept a lot. And so we were kind of back and forth between her and my dad. And then she met my stepdad, who was very harsh, disciplinarian, total opposite of my mom, who's just like a wild, free spirit person. Always took us on like archaeology digs. She was a anthropologist, archaeologist, sociologist, women studies professor. So she showed me just like the world, and we would go on trips, but we would actually be involved in the culture, which sparked kind of my insatiable drive to learn and my worldliness overall, and a few teachers along the way. So when she got with my stepdad, he was very, very cruel and was in a lot of physical pain, had his own trauma. We moved to the suburbs of Philadelphia, which was a total culture shock. I was like, this, like, I wanted to be a country singer. And then I quickly went into all the phases of like trying out different things. I was just morphing my personality and self idea of self into like, I'm ghetto now, I'm emo now, I'm, you know, trying everything on, because we were living in this big culture. And then 3 years later, we moved back to where I came from. And I was a completely different person.
How old were you then?
13.
When you moved back?
Yeah. So from 10 to 13, I lived in the suburbs of Philly.
Okay.
And my mom's whole...
Oh, such a formative age.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. My whole extended family on my mom's side lived there too. So it was a very like familial time. We got to hang out with all my cousins and... but I think there was a lot of loss with my dad. Just he would come and pick us up, take us for the weekend, drive us back like every other weekend. My dad was the most fun dad for a kid. Like he was very hands-on. He would build forts with us and igloos. We'd wake up and there's like an igloo on the porch and he has hot chocolate ready. And he was a ski instructor and like just so much fun. But also... He would have episodes of just like screaming at God, why me? And me and my sister would get really stiff and still and stifle ourselves and try to just be really small until he stopped. And that was a pattern my whole childhood.
Is your sister younger than you?
My younger sister. And my older sister, who's 8 years older than me, has a different dad. And that's its own trauma. Like her dad, who she thought was her dad while growing up, shot himself in the head and lived, and then was like permanently autistic. And he did that on her 13th birthday. And I was little, so she was like very motherly to me because my mom was very checked out at that time. And, you know, so I was kind of the middle and oldest with my half sister. She's my full sister to me.
Did you feel like you had a protective role with your younger sister?
Yeah. And we were left to our own devices a lot. And I think that was traumatic for her in a lot of ways, me being the quote adult, not as an adult. Mm-hmm. So she's got a lot of stories about our childhood.
How much older were you?
Two years.
You weren't even that much older.
We're very close.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's intense. So how did you feel that shift to Pennsylvania when you shifted there and then when you shifted back? I'm wondering what both of those shifts were like. What was your experience with it?
The shift there was, it opened up my vision of the world and experience of other, of diversity, like tenfold. And I also was able to bring the country with me. So there was like a strip of woods and I would get all the neighborhood kids to come over and we would go and explore the underground tunnels with flashlights and build, like, we totally brought the country to the city. So that still stayed intact for me. And that was a vital part of, like, nature was my safe place and still is. And then the shift back was really hard because I was like, I can't go back. I can't get small again. I don't want to go back. But then when I got there, I was at like a crossroads, you know, times in your life where you're like, this was very clearly a crossroad. And I didn't know that at the time. But a friend that I'd met, so weird, a friend that I'd met in Ridley, which is the suburb that we lived in, pretty much the week we got there, met her on the playground before we went to school together, and then found out her grandparents were from Catawissa, so we would take her home with us to go visit her family. And then after I left, like midway through the school year, back home, she like gave me her skateboard and signed it, and I thought I'd never see her again, and then I like heard her voice in the hallway and rounded the corner, and there she was. And she was a really, lived in really impoverished, like in a trailer park, and her parents were developmentally disabled. And so she immediately was outcasted. She's like a loud, obnoxious, like fuck everyone kind of person.
Yeah.
So I had to choose between like, do I hang out with the popular girls and go back to my country roots and be that girl that I thought I was going to be, a cheerleader, blah, blah, blah. Or am I going to choose my friend? Because she was immediately ostracized and I chose her. And then I was just, every bit of weird that I experienced in the suburbs, I just completely went like full force with that in this small rural town. And we rebelled against every conservative thing that existed there.
What was that? What did that feel like? I mean, that's kind of an unusual experience for a coming of age story, but it sounds freeing. It sounds
like,
how did it feel?
It was freeing. And I think, like we talked about before, that sense of freedom with school. School was such an oppressive place for me right away. Just like my body shut down in a lot of ways, realizing that I wasn't being taught to be myself. Yeah. I was being taught to be a cog.
Yes.
And my little self knew that without having the words or ideas to put to it. So having this friend, yeah, I was like, we're going to test every limit and boundary that we possibly can. And at the same time, I lived in her shadow. I was her like quiet, kind sidekick that was just kind of there in the muck. Yeah. Wreaking havoc, but in my own shadowy way. And then eventually I had to kind of bust out of that and be like, no, I'm my own self and I need to take up my space. So that was a journey in taking up my own space too.
With an inevitable conclusion.
Yeah.
What would you say, like, in that time period when you were just really letting go and bringing the rebellion, what was the big learning from that era for you?
To see past facades. I think that I've always had a talent in really being able to see through masks and shields in people, but that was such a formative time where, like, instead of putting on masks, I was still shape-shifting, but it wasn't performative. It was like explorative. So I could see through all the false personas around me and continue to be able to do that pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I think is why I work with children so well, because you can put up whatever front you want. I see you. And everyone here can judge you. All these adults can tell me that you're a bad kid and I'm not going to believe them. Because no one's a bad kid.
Having that in their life gives them the chance to grow up without developing these incredibly complicated personas mm-hmm. that just sap all our energy.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you had to outgrow that relationship, it sounded like, a little bit. And then what happened next?
I would say I got pretty into, like, party culture. I was... So in college, you know, I did the college thing, but it was always like...
Where'd you go?
I went to a small liberal arts school, Susquehanna University, that I majored in creative writing. And it was... I was a good writer. I was always, you know, blogging and writing. But writing was always for me. It wasn't... It also wasn't performative. It was explorative. And it just seemed like the easy choice. Like, everyone was like, hey, you should do this. And I had a passion for it, so I said, okay. And it was like one of the top writing schools in the time, so we had really amazing teachers, and I was a good student. I always got really good grades, even though I was partying all the time. Like, I don't know how I balanced it. I don't know how I did it. But I sought out, or kind of was a magnet to, just like the weirdest, strangest, oddball people. And that's just kind of... my vibe tribe. And we had a lot of fun, but not in like a Puritan way. It was just like, let's get fucked up and have fun. I got to study abroad in Amsterdam. That was life-changing. I feel like I finally pushed out of my shell. I would be so anxious in school and in class until that point that I couldn't talk without my voice shaking. My stomach used to make like insane noises just if there are any silences in class. Mm-hmm. I was so afraid of my own intelligence intellectually. I mean, I studied all kinds of things. My mom was a professor at my school, so I took her women's studies class. She made me stand up and talk about my gay ex-boyfriend. Relationships have also been somewhere that I've put a lot of focus in on my life. Like, I think I compartmentalized through relationships my trauma and work. That has been a pattern until like a couple years ago, probably, where I was codependent and working my shit out through relationships,
one piece at a time,
instead of community, which now I want to be like in community doing that.
Yeah. And that's an incredible feeling. The question is, what does that mean? Because, boy, when you start getting down to the nuts and bolts of it, it gets so confusing so quickly.
Yeah.
How did you end up out here in the West Coast? Mm.
I graduated from college and went back home for a bit, lived with my dad for the first time, and that was really great. And
that felt good.
Yeah, it was nice. He and I have it's a tense relationship, but I love him so much. So I was working as like a teacher at daycares. I've always worked with children since I was like 17, and I've helped raise my nephews. My sister got pregnant when she was 16 with her first kid. So my nephews are like in their 20s. Mm-hmm. and then I got a DUI, and I was moving in with my friend Mo in Bellefonte. We were both like planning to move in together. That happened, and I had to step out of like the childcare world and work like a stupid retail job. And then she got into OSU, and she knew that I wanted to go to like just get out of Pennsylvania. And Oregon was one of my top three, so she invited me along on the journey. And I got a job with the Children's Farm Home before I even moved out here. I mean, I interviewed. Then I got the job with the newspaper, so I was able to actually do something with my writing career, which was pretty unheard of, I think, for a lot of writers. I went full on. I mean, I worked every day of my life for maybe 5 years when I first moved out here. When I finally got both jobs at once, I was literally working all of the time in a really intense, traumatic environment with children, and then working at a newspaper as the editor, moved up to editor-in-chief, and was like putting on 3 events a week. And then the pandemic hit, and I was like, this is no longer fun. I'm finally seeing how fucked up my nervous system is. You know, I was really active in the Black Lives Matter movement. I was, and God, if I'd known what I know now, I would have come into that space a lot differently. But I think I needed to be where I was to be where I am. So.
Oh, isn't it always that way?
Yeah.
All of the trauma, all of the crap we get wrong, it wasn't wrong at all.
Yeah.
That was the process to learn.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. And that brings us pretty current.
Pretty current.
Are there any other highlights, any other stage setting details?
Yeah. I got to a point where it was time to leave the farm home. And I'd been there for 5.5 years. I just left the Advocate paper some months before, and this was coming out of pandemic, so we were still in it, but I knew that I would know when it was time to go. And yeah, it was just time. So I got the job I have now, working as a certifier for treatment foster care, and super love it. And now I'm coming again to this place where I'm like, I cannot be complicit in a system that doesn't represent my values, because this system is built on compliance.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I specify in certifying homes for queer kids specifically, which feels really good. And that's another thing that's blossomed. I guess that's a big part of my journey. I've always known I was queer, but I've really transformed on my queer journey to where I am now. I'm feeling very they, them. I'm like very in touch with my inner masculine, feminine, inner non-binary beingness and how it all dances together. I've done a lot of embodiment work. I've been obsessed with past life hypnosis, quantum healing hypnosis. I love anything quantum.
I can't wait to find out what the heck you're talking about.
I know. It's so fascinating. Oh my God, I could talk about that all day.
Well, I intend to hear about it for about 4 hours, yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah.
I want to experience that stuff. I want to experience all of it.
Me too.
All of it. Everyone else's magic is its own unique magic that I could never have imagined.
Yes. Yes.
And so what? What's the point? What's the point of any of it? What's the point of any of this stuff?
To know the self.
It makes life a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yes, I'm a full believer in magic, and I'd rather believe in everything until I'm proven wrong than like not believe in anything. I'm very in touch. I feel very in touch with like the nature spirit realm and the fae realm, elven realm.
What do you mean by in touch? What does that mean?
Like there, like I'm present with it all the time.
How?
Ritually, I've just...
Can you see it? Can you sense
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I've had a few sightings with the fae, one recent one. Otherwise, just kind of a knowing. I have like a little bag of offerings that I bring with me when I go on hikes.
So it's more like emotional sensation, like just sensing the emotions or the vibrate or the energy.
Somatic.
Like energy.
Like energetic. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So yeah. It, would you be able to describe this interaction that you came to mind with the fae?
Well, I just did a tarot reading and I pulled a card. It was about the fae, and I did like a little ritual and a candle ritual, and then we went outside. I was with Brandon. We went outside, and I just saw this light. And there's no lightning, bugs, fireflies, you know, in
there
Oregon.
Are not. You are
and
correct.
It was just right, you know, when something's right in your periphery, so you're like, okay, and it just like whew, flew, and it was right after this, so I was like, they're here. And I've had sleep paralysis and have seen all kinds of things since I was really young. That was a part of the fear piece too. When I was around five, I was like experiencing vivid sleep paralysis and hypnagogic hallucinations almost nightly.
Probably from the time I was 15, it didn't end until very recently. I had horrific, like where you wake up, but you're mentally awake, but your physically body does not wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're aware of everything in the room, and you're aware that you can't move. And usually there would be like a small, like a cat size or a small dog walking up the covers. I could feel the footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
Always a feeling of utter horror, just the end of the world, death is in the room, horror, abstract.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I would see a form, hear voice, loud metallic screeching. One time I woke up and my eyes were open and I was looking up at the ceiling and there was this like evil face on the ceiling looking at me, and I'm fully awake, fully aware of the room, person sleeping next to me, and I'm looking at this face that's looking back at me, and there's nothing I can do. And it just begins to descend. And it's just that creepy horrors that the little infant makes up to make sense of the stuff that doesn't feel right around them.
My eyes water when I hear people's stories. So yeah.
They're crazy and they're all so different. It was your experience. Did your experience have any of those elements?
The one that happened a lot was I would get sleep paralysis and then I would hear like a stir of echoes around me saying my name in all different tones and voices, whispering to screaming. And I would get the feeling like I got really, 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 really small, like nothing. I was nothing. And the whole of everything was over me. And then I would expand into the everything. And then I got this like vision of like it was static. And then this vision of, I don't know if it was flesh burning. I don't know. It was just really, really split second. I could never figure it out. And then there would be, you know, shadow people by my bed. My sister said like my door opened and slammed shut on its own one time when I was in my room and she was watching me. And my mom took me to see the doctor and they were like, oh yeah, it's just made up. She's having these hallucinogenic, whatever. Mm-hmm. So they tried to convince me that it wasn't real, which made me feel even worse.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And then I heard, singing in my closet. One time I found a doll that I'd never seen before there was, when we first moved into this home, my mom found me in the bedroom that I would become mine, and I was talking to someone or something, and I told her it was Sherry. And apparently we were tight, and then something happened where it was like, Sherry's not nice anymore. Yeah, and then I had other experiences at my dad's trailer, so it wasn't just my mom. And I still get sleep paralysis, but it came back a few years ago, and then it made contact, and it was like really scary. Like one time I woke, I saw this woman, this old woman with like long hair, crouched down, sitting next to Brandon, and we just started dating. And I was like screaming, and he just started stroking my feet, like to calm me down, and just more and more contact. Now I'm at the point where I will yell, I will assert myself,
mm-hmm.
and
physically.
I'll come out of it. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. That's kind of interesting because that's always what it took me for me too.
Yeah.
Angela and Bonnie both know the sound that I make when I'm in that paralysis state. And they'll wake me up immediately. It still seems like forever, mm-hmm. but it is so nice to have that person shake you, say something to you. Otherwise, I have to wait until I can bring the power up to my voice to bring it out.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah.
What do you attribute all this to?
Being a witch.
How do you explain all these different phenomena that you're describing, having experienced?
There's so many dimensions and layers that we exist like overlapping with, and I think that it's definitely a natural gift that I have, that I've always had, and it's something that is in my family. And my ancestry dates back, I think I'm doing research into like Celtic times, so Druidism calls to me a lot, so I feel we all have access to that, and it's not something we're taught or know how to tap into. Some people are just extra sensitive to it and already go there without really knowing how to traverse it. I would like to learn more about how to traverse it.
Mm.
And I think the world is just pure magic, and we have been purposefully blinded and shielded from that. I could do magic right now in this room with any like inanimate object, or go out into the woods and be in communion there, you know. And it's really hard to do that work yourself. It's going to have to come through community. And
there's that word again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where I feel I'm headed now.
What is, I want to continue on this other thread, but I also want to ask, what does that word mean to you? What is community? What does this look like? What are you looking for?
Yeah. Interdependence, like okay. really, and not just with people. Like that, I'm so sick of all of these, you know, the social justice issues that are so, so, so important, but they are completely tied to eco-justice and the, like, all of the other living beings that we are surrounded with. We are living on a living being that's giving us all life all the time. So community to me doesn't mean like people community. It's like, I am in community and communion with all that is around me all the time. And how can I be intentional and intact with that?
You're talking about finding community inside yourself.
As above.
As above, so below.
Yes.
That gives me chills because you're describing the journey. I tried to fill my life with people because there was a gaping emptiness. The parties, the everything, just trying to fill that. And nothing could fill it. And it wasn't until I realized that what I was looking for was community inside myself. I was looking for it inside me, not inside other people.
Mm-hmm.
And now as I start, like I am now at the beginning of starting to come awake to a life where I am filling myself.
Mm.
And already the ripples of that fullness starting to overflow and just start affecting, because every little action, every little word, every little emotion that I have has an effect on the world around me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just everything just starting to become joy because I'm in communion with myself. And I'm not always like, mm-hmm. holy hell, this is a practice thing, but it's the type of thing where I grew up hungry for truth. And I thought I had to look within these confined boxes of the cults and the Christianity, like extreme Christianity I grew up in. But when I realized that there are no boundaries, I can look anywhere. I found all the truth. inside myself. And I cultivated that my whole life, that hunger for the truth. So it just, it's like those, one of those hole games where you move the hole around, hole.io. Mm-hmm. No, you probably don't know, because it's like an iPhone game. No. But it's like every time you swallow like a building down this black hole, and then the hole gets bigger, and then it gets bigger. And the more you eat, the bigger it gets. And it's like this exponential growth. That's what it feels like. I'm not having to learn anything anymore. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to take notes. I don't have to like read that section again. Whatever this building energy inside me is, I'm just drawn to the things that will fill it up. And as I read them, as I listen, as I digest, as I have a conversation, that filling just happens as the words pass through.
Right. You don't have to retain it.
And so it becomes exponential.
Yeah.
Because and every piece stacks on top, and you can't forget anything because it's emotional learning.
Right.
And I've spoken as somebody who experiences the world emotionally. Wow. That's I went beautiful. Off on a rant there.
I love that.
I'm trying to learn about you.
I know. Well, it's a conversation.
It is. And I really appreciate that. So I don't want to say, well, that brings us to now, because I feel like we were on something, a thread that I wanted to pursue, but I just don't remember exactly what it was. Do you remember? No.
No.
Okay, perfect.
There
so
was something too, and
it'll come back. If it's meant to, it'll come back.
Exactly.
This is what makes doing finally awesome, because you don't have to do anything. So here we are now in this one moment in space, time. Who are you? How do you see yourself? If you wanted to put yourself in a box for somebody and be like, this is who I am, or just what comes up for you. Sometimes I ask a question like 15 different times in a row because I don't want an answer to my question. I want what comes up inside you. Who are you now? What do you want?
Okay. So when we were journeying earlier, when I was presenting myself to that like little girl self, I saw myself like shifting through all of these different versions of me, and that's how I feel within myself now. I'm fluid in a way that I've felt I've never been able to be since I was a small child, like and in a different way, like in a way that I have agency over and more like it's refined. It's when I was young, it was raw and it was just like totally wild, and it's still wild and raw, but it's refined. And it's like, so I see myself in all of my shape shifting of like who I am in my feminine, who I am in my masculine, who I am as like an increasingly more and more non-binary person, who I am is so interconnected. I don't know if I could put it in a box because it has like tendrils, you know, into everything. It's like mycelial.
I'm raising my hand because I feel like I want to ask a question.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should. So you've brought up a few times your orientation, your binary, non-binary, kind of just like that whole journey aspect for you. And as somebody who's never thought about it, never sat with it, never had to, never experienced any of that, why does that feel important to you? Like, why is that something that comes up? Why is that? I don't know exactly what I'm trying to ask, but I'm just curious what that feels like. Why is it important?
It is really important to me.
Yes.
And it's, I think it's part of what I'm here for. It's truth to me that we are never stagnant in our being, and whether that's however we identify. I mean, and that is part of my calling with supporting children and other queer people, and because there is no binary. Binary doesn't exist, and I've known that my whole life. I've always been in school like, why aren't we, like, all of this is interconnected. It all flows together. Why are we separating everything? I could never latch on to that, like, dissect and, you know, separate kind of way of learning. Like, I saw just like how everything is always interconnected. So that journey for me is really being able to embody and model that I am not any one thing. I am not on any one side of any binary. You know, it's not about gender identity specifically. It's that everything has variables. Like, all life is just a mass spectrum of all of these variables. And if we focus in on any one thing, like, you know, cellular or sexual, or it's just like teeming with what we contain multitudes. That's just it. So
I feel like what you're describing resonates with my experience with the feminine and the masculine energies. Just that core essence of who I am, that I always saw myself as the provider, the man, the, you know, and growing up, a lot of people, many times people were like, you should have been a girl, because I was always very sensitive. I was always like, I was a chameleon. I always was reading the emotions, and I've always operated from my emotions. So I always tried to stifle that, of course. But you were talking about how there is no binary. There is no binary. And to me, that is the most powerful hope that we have, because what I learned is that unless you can become your feminine, you cannot wake up. Mm-hmm. You cannot become aware of yourself. You will not find enlightenment, whatever the fuck you want to call it. In order to get there, you must first become your feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, binary doesn't exist. I agree. And I feel like what I'm kind of reading between the lines, correct me if I'm wrong, of course, is that the physical gender, the physical, the sexual, the root of the physical, the observable with the five senses, human, that's the part we can observe that way, is of course an exact parallel. And so to you, it feels like it's a symbol. That's an important symbol that represents the masculine and the feminine, the energy, all the energies, which the Western culture stifles all equally. So that would make sense that it would be a symbol.
Yes.
Does that resonate? Yeah.
And everything in between, because I mean, there are 40 plus intersex sexes, like variations of intersex peoples according to their genital makeup.
And because that's everyone wants to belong to a group. So that's
something
not
we
alone.
Talk about, and was literally, you know, like the culture, and that's another, I think it gets hairy when we talk about feminine, masculine in the divine way. And then what our culture deems feminine and masculine are completely different things. And since we know that there's this like spectrum of intersex in between when we're talking about biologically, then we know that it's not even just divine feminine, divine masculine. There is divine in between. And this is the space that I feel like I'm traversing now. It started with like getting into my feminine, masculine and being in communion with them inside myself. And then I was like, oh my God, there are all of these other embodiments in between those two, you know, I don't even want to say ends of the spectrum, because I don't believe that it's a straight line.
You're using is all binary. And to me, the image that's forming in my head as I hear you search for the words to describe the emotions that you're trying to describe, the image that's forming in my head is of a wave pattern. Where it's like when you go too far, it's all balance. When you go too far to the masculine, you end up going to the feminine. And it's just like this wave balance, and it's just breathing. And it's all, so my question is, why 40? Why are there any? Like, ultimately, isn't that where we actually are? Is the truth is it's all definitions.
Mm-hmm.
And so you are the only formed energy, that star being that you were, that saw need on the planet and was drawn to it because you're a creator. And why would you not help fear? You hear the fear, you're drawn to it, and you come and you take it on to heal it. And your energy draws all the elements out of the environment to create the avatar that you then get to take on and process the pain to bring the healing. And of course, then you, as the more time you spend in the avatar, the more you forget the who you are and why you came. But then as you process finally the pain and turn back to yourself, you find yourself. Mm-hmm. You forgot for a minute, but there you are. You're always there. You're always safe. Yeah. There are no definitions. There are no borders. There are no walls. It's all stuff that you, it's all stuff that I use to define myself into safety, but it just keeps me locked in. All right, another rabbit trail.
No, I love it. It's fun. I've to follow you on.
This is my favorite. This is my favorite thing to do, to talk to somebody about these things, because I'm trying to figure all this out.
Yeah,
that's why I talk around it and talk, like, sometimes lose my train of thought, because this is all just emotions.
Yeah,
and the magic, if the only thing that has to change to go from not walking in the magic to walking in the magic is the worldview has to shift to be a worldview where the magic already exists.
Yes.
It's already there. And that's what I'm trying to figure out, because I'm reading this book, Hands of Light or Light, whatever. And she's describing this world. And she's using her metaphors. She's using her stories. But she has a whole university and teaches it. And a lot of people... her metaphors work for them.
Yeah.
But the world she's exploring and the world I'm exploring and the world you're exploring, it's all the exact same world.
Yes.
But since it's being created by this creator, it's a world that only this creator could come up with.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I like to see in it. So here we are. And I'm trying to gather the nugget out of that, of how you see yourself.
Well, I have a thought, because I don't know. This is what's coming to me.
Sweet.
I'm very in touch with my spirit, just say, my soul. And
how does that in touch? Like, what does that look like to you? What is your soul?
I think what's so, well, I'll start with like life, you know, life here, life on Earth. It's so exciting because there are so many variables. We can come in as souls and try on anything. You know, like any variable that exists that's within our ability to do so as a soul, we get to try on. And I know through what I know about the spirit realm and what we are as souls, as energy, that is like a thread. That's an essence. Like, my soul is an essence of me, and my human Stevie is animal, is in part animal. And those two, that's another relationship that I've cultivated, is this soul essence that I know I'm pretty tapped into and can identify. And then, like, I've always kind of grieved the loss of this life, this being, that I know that when my soul goes back to the other realm, they're gonna have to die. And what a beautiful thing to get to experience that life and be in communion as a soul with this, like, human, animal, beautiful, variable creature. And I think, you know, everybody's searching for the constant, and that is the constant, but the constant isn't here. This world is constantly in motion. We're constantly changing. We're constantly evolving. The only thing that's constant is change. And then we get back to our essence, and we take the lessons that we've learned, and we evolve as souls too. So I guess, that I don't know if that means that it's constant, but the essence is your essential thread, your blueprint. That's why we all have different gifts that we come here with. I guess I just went down a rabbit hole.
Oh, I like that.
That's what was coming to my mind.
That's good. That's good. No, I appreciate it. And it's a story. That's mm-hmm. that's a story to make sense of emotions about feelings. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's so abstract. And the story is fantastic. And I appreciate it. And everyone's story, that's the creation. Because that's the way the world looks to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way it is. And it's beautiful. I just get to experience something I could not have imagined. It is great. Where do you go next? What do you see coming for you?
I want to become a somatic practitioner, and I want to work in cultural somatics, and do it in an earth-based setting. And I don't know, this is like the first step in the journey. It just really started to form with what I've been reading, and not even reading, but exploring, journeying into the things that have come my way. I feel I can really take everything that I've wanted to become and do and ground it into the earth, in community. Right? So what I see that as is like we're healing, we're facilitating healing. Maybe there's more than just me, but we're in nature healing with the earth, because we can't heal ourselves without going to the source of that trauma that we are enacting from just thousands of years of trauma. That is, we're just all acting from a stuck place, consciously or unconsciously. So I don't want to be in rooms and classrooms and on Zoom and doing the work to only save humanity. Like, I want to be in the wild doing the work for the sake of something bigger than ourselves. Yeah.
In the wild, but with the humans.
Yeah.
You want to be in
We are the stewards of the earth.
Yes.
So the only way to heal is to become the stewards of the earth. We can't be stewards of ourselves without doing healing with our relation to what gives us life. So anything life-giving, that's what I want to invest my energy in. And it's so hard because there's so much that is life-taking that is just built into our everyday. You can't even see it all. Or no. Like, you might be told, like, this is life-giving, and it could be life-taking because it's so based on your own energetics and what you need and how you can tap into your intuition and what is speaking to you in the moment.
How do you figure out what to do then if you never know?
Do what you're doing, like get to self, get in relation with self in all of the multitude of selves and community inside you. Yeah.
Because community it is.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get deep enough into the community, you find yourself standing in the space that is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oops, oh, I guess I'm everything. Okay, great. So what? Because it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Yeah. And again, it's checking for false binaries. Like, when you have a thought that says good or bad, checkpoint. What is it really? Like, let's unpack that. What is that? What is good and bad to you in relation to this?
Oh, you're saying if you have an awareness of something being good or bad.
Like, if you are immediately, if your brain is like bad or good.
Mm-hmm. The feeling of
just check thing. That. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why? Which is the what question, who am I? That's really okay. The question, who am I?
Yeah.
Why does this feeling come up? And to me, you're describing attachment, letting go of attachments.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah.
But that's abstract. And
no, yeah.
And every one of these little abstract rabbit trails, it would be a whole conversation.
I know.
And a lot of every single thing we're talking about, I'm reading about in Light Emerging.
Right, I would now. Love to read
every
that.
Single thing. It's just mind blowing. It's incredible.
Does the author read it out loud?
I don't know.
On Audible?
I don't know. I really like it, and I've read most of the way through it already on Audible, listened, yeah. And I've gone back and read a couple of chapters in the book, and the feel is so different. Mm. It feels like, but I don't know. It could be the author, but it doesn't feel like it is.
Yeah. I'm going to be experiencing that.
Yeah. But it's good. And you get a different experience in the reading of it. But So you want to be, I'm just trying to like nutshell this a little bit at the risk of putting things in a box. And I like to put things in boxes because nothing belongs in a box. And so it becomes easier and easier to see how unfitting boxes are when we start putting things in boxes. It's great. But you want to, what it is that you want to be doing. It's a little hard to distill out of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of nebulous, kind of abstract. But is that what you are doing? Are you doing it? Well, the thing you want to be doing, are you doing it?
No, I'm starting. I'm learning. And I'm really alive in that. I'm not doing yet.
What will be the point?
Parts of me have been doing it my whole life. That's what's the draw is. That's where I'm like, oh, this is the name of the thing that doesn't even have a name yet that I've
doesn't even have a name
been
yet.
Longing for forever. Hmm. So,
and yet your initial response when I asked, are you doing it, is no.
Yeah, because I'm very much still a part of the systems that have suppressed and oppressed. And
why are you still a part of them?
Because I am reliant on them right now, because I've only just awoken to this as a possibility. So I have to shift, and that's going to take some unraveling and spaciousness. And I'm very much in the tangle of what I'm shifting out of. So it's going to be a process to get there, but I'm going to do a little, as much as I can at a time.
What does the point look like where you, in response to, are you doing it, will have the gut response of yes?
When my living is spent with life in the,
in community.
Yeah. Life giving. Like if I'm, I would confidently be able to say yes if I could look at the way that I'm spending my days, which are the ways that we spend our lives, Annie Dillard, and like see that all around me are life-giving practices. I'm surrounded by life. I'm like the growth is happening, you know, that I was describing earlier, that whatever the setting is, it's blooming. And maybe it's dying too, because like death and life are so intertwined and dependent, interdependent on one another.
It's breathing.
So yeah, it's seasons, and it's being really, really, really in tune with that, and not literally in a box, in an office, wilting, doing work that a robot could do, would gladly probably do.
I don't think robots really care yet.
Yeah.
I'm getting a kind of a nebulous, you know, kind of like these nebulous things that you want to get to before you feel like you're really doing it. But what I'm wondering is, what are some actual physical things? Like, what does that look like? What do you imagine yourself? What does it look like? What is the you that would say, yes, I am? what's different about the you that is sitting in front of me?
Yeah. They're very, their vibration is really much higher. And they're very just moving, more movement, more not afraid to just like get really excited and get really happy or be really whatever the fuck I need to be in the moment. Like to not hold it all in or hold it all together. Just let it be. So very alive. I think I would look very alive. There have been a few people as a child growing up that I've met, like adults, that were just like so alive. And what a magic that was to be in the presence of.
Yes.
And I feel like it's the representation. It's so hard to find that now. And it gets, I feel like at the farm home, Mary and I were like that when we were together. We were just like full of life and it was looked down on. We were like separated for it. They didn't want us to work together.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, no, thank you. We don't need that representation for the children. Thank you. Like,
that's sad.
And I don't see that just for myself. I see that it's happening all around me, that we're all alive, that we're all like just not afraid to say the thing or feel the thing or shift in the way that we need to in the moment.
The problem is that human freedom doesn't work real well with corporate structure.
Yeah.
So that's why the schools look like they do. That's why the culture, you know, it's where we are, and it all fits. It's all the outgrowth of the humans that are humaning on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
But it can feel very exceedingly restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's the work.
So what's keeping you from being that person right now?
My own healing that I need to get through.
Says who? Who decides?
I do. There's things I need to shed.
Says who?
I just did some of that when we were journeying earlier, so.
You did.
Yeah. Like, I know that.
And you will again.
Yeah.
And you will again.
It's constant.
For the rest of your life. So I'm saying, who decides? Who decides what it is when you've achieved it and when you get to finally be free?
I'm not waiting for permission. Definitely not.
And yet you're not there. At least that's what I hear you saying. And so what I'm trying to get to is the understanding, the worldview behind this.
Because
not just there.
Me needs to shift.
Who else needs to shift?
The whole world needs to shift.
So you're not going to get there until the whole world shifts.
We're all getting there. That's
We're all getting there. Yeah. But I'm talking about the you that when someone says, are you doing it? Can mm-hmm. say yes.
Mm-hmm.
That worldview, that gut response. I'm talking about the you that is that person, not the you that has attained world peace or whatever.
No,
high in the sky.
Don't need world
but I'm
peace.
Just saying, who decides when you are the person that is the healer, that is the person you were meant to be? Because you're always going to be learning. You're always going to have tons of stuff you don't know.
I am that person now. I am that person. I'm a version of that person. I'm at a place that is not the same as the place that you'd asked about. And I know that I will arrive at that place. I'm not there now. I'm still the same person at core, but I'm not there in the imagery of that place because it's not transmuted yet.
Do you feel like you can be there within the span of your physical life?
Yeah. I feel like I can be there right now, too. I mean, I know time isn't, if we're going to get all quantum, like, you know.
I would love to.
Nothing is linear. It already exists. That version of me already exists and is with me right now, probably aiding me, helping me be here. Just as that little girl exists right now, too.
Mm.
It all exists now.
Now, what are you most afraid of? What is the thing that comes right from your gut?
I'm really afraid of not getting there not arriving with the people that I love and care about. I'm not afraid of loss. Losing people along the way is different than not heading toward a mutually agreeable destination. I don't even want to say destination. There's no end point. But
words. Words are so limiting. Ah.
Pilgrimage. I know.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So why use them? Because it's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It's fun of writing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of just not arriving with my loved ones. Because that's a pattern that I've experienced with people I deeply love, is that there's like a fissure and I can't reach them. And then that aliveness in me wilts because that alone feeling creeps in again. And I'm like,
looking for community again.
I want to do this together.
And it's like you say, the truth is you always actually have the community right there.
Mm-hmm.
You're
and it
processing.
Feels so good though, when there's beings that are with you but on that journey.
When it doesn't feel bad, when there's not.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Now we're at attachment
where
again.
where you freaking enter whatever you want to call it, heaven. Mm-hmm. Enlightenment. Oh, a quote I really like from one of the books I'm reading. Oh my gosh, I'm bad with names. Do your work without any attachment to the results.
Yes. It's not about the destination. Yeah.
Life just gets fun. It's just purely fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let go of the outcome.
Let go of the outcome.
That's been a huge
That's the source of
lesson.
Pain. Let go of the outcome. It's okay.
Yes, 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 yes.
And boy, there's so many different threads that I would love to pursue, but I am so thankful that you were willing to take me on that little story journey.
Yeah, there's lots we could unpack it in the future.
And then we could talk about quantum stuff.
Hell yeah.
Because neither of us probably really understand it like at all, but we have a lot of feelings about it.
Yeah, I can feel it. I can definitely feel it better than I can understand it.
Okay, here's what I want to do. If you're up for just the fantasy of it. Mm-hmm. I'm reading these books, Hands of Light, Light Emerging, and then Core Star Healing or something like that. Mm. Three books. Brandon's going to read them. I have a feeling with everything you've said, you won't be able to help yourself. You'll be drawn to them eventually. You can't help yourself. So once we've all read it, had some time to process it, I say we sit down and just unpack it a little bit.
I love that.
Sweet.
I love it.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Feels good.